and really excited about the work that we're going to do today. We turn a corner into some really good practical application in some specific areas. We're going to work a lot on communication. One of the biggest areas that couples will show up with just needed help in a marriage is related to communication. And so this is a biggie that really can be very helpful, and I'm praying is very game-changing for you in your marriage. And then in session two this morning, we'll look at really the more practical side of doing life and friendships and house and kids and finances. Especially, we'll spend some time in finances and just taking a fresh look at some things that maybe you've been doing for a long time, but a fresh look gives you an idea, oh, wow, we've never really considered that or done that, and help bring some life. Again, even financial stress can be one of the big hurdles or hardships in a marriage, and so we want to be a blessing in those practical areas. And then in session three, we'll finish the day by looking at intimacy. It's one of those things where, unfortunately, the church has not done a good job of talking about the beauty and the wonder of marital intimacy. We've allowed it become this, this blacklisted topic. And yet, it's God's design. It's a beautiful, important part of our marriages and our oneness. And so we'll dig in and talk about some different variants related to that and just hopefully bring some great blessing to that area for you as well. So I'm excited about our morning. Guys, it's not about the nail, okay? So let's remember that. Lesson number one, write that down. Let's dig in. How important is communication? It's really important if you get oneness. If we're really sewn together as one, then I don't get the luxury of just engaging you in a more togetherness view when I feel like it, when I'm up for it. No, every step of every detail of every day has got to have a good temperament of communication. Does that mean you have to talk about everything? No, but it means you have to find those rhythms of where and how to communicate, and love each other and listen and practice those things well. Good communication is the groundwork that allows you to do almost everything else well in daily marriage. From your daily decisions about household practices to enjoying your sexual intimacy, communication is a big part of that, to what groceries to buy. In your marriage, you can be a monster or a dream lover simply based on your communication. It's that night and day, I believe. And so I'm just excited about us digging in on this area. If you think about it, without good communication, you really don't have a relationship. You might have something, you call it, but do you know each other? Do you have a relationship, a give and take? You know, if you went on a road trip 2,000 miles to the east, and there's a video camera set up in the car. You were there with your best friend on this road trip, and you're so excited and leaving and packing your bags, and then the world got to watch just the quiet, and there's no talking or laughter or stories or sharing. It just was hours upon hours of just road trip and road, and you know, maybe you talked about where you're going to eat or whatever, but You would really wonder, if you're outside of that looking in, wow, is there really a thriving relationship here or not? And so we want to break in and really look at this and see and understand that communication is that heartbeat of a good relationship. Without good, regular, honest communication, the relationship withers. A relationship does not exist or thrive without good communication. Again, we've seen that thing that I was talking about where a marriage really is more of a together thing. It's two individuals living under the same house, sharing a bed, sharing a bank account. But without good communication, that's one of those big factors where a couple can be really living in a state of divorce, even though all those other practical things are in play. And so we want to break in. If that's become a bad habit, we want to break in to some really practical looks at that this morning. And so with that, I want to pray real quick and we'll dive in. Father, we thank you for this time, for this place, for bringing us back this morning. That we'd be attentive in this early hour, especially on this big topic, that you would use me to bring practical help and insight. Lord, I pray the Holy Spirit would bring conviction on areas where we've been lazy or we've ignored certain facets, that we would be willing to take on some new practices, willing to engage each other in a new way for the sake of that oneness thriving and our marriages going to another level, really enriching our relationships and what that means for the home and the family. Lord, give my throat some endurance this morning in three sessions and the cold thing running through my house that everything would work well and we could finish strong today. We love you and are excited about what you have for us and submit ourselves to you. In Jesus' name, amen. What is communication is the first question. And the first thing we have to acknowledge is it's more than just talking. It's sharing true feelings. It's understanding the heart of the other person. It's being understood. In your marriage, you don't want communication to be just a delivered message. See, sometimes we think about it that way. We think about, okay, you sit down, you write a letter, put it in the envelope, you put the postage on it, and you mail it, and they're going to get that communication. But in our marriages, don't we want it to be more than just, I'm talking at you, you hear me, and then that's it? It needs to be more than just information translated if it's going to produce a depth and a thriving within the relationship. And so we need to dig into some of the layers of communication to really understand. And the first layer is to understand that communication is largely nonverbal. Statistics show this to be really surprising. And you read stats about this. One stat, and I think you got a blank in your handout. Communication is 10% verbal, 30% sounds, and 60% body language. Especially in a marriage where you spend so many hours and days together, you pick up on each other's idiosyncrasies. You pick up on each other's signs and signals. Where you have that connection, where you don't have to say everything. And so what is the main way you communicate nonverbally? If our communication is heavily nonverbal, then we need to not just talk this morning about the things we say. We need to slow down and really acknowledge, what are my nonverbal things? And how am I hurting or hindering the relationship by not addressing those or by learning how to wield them rightly so that we can acknowledge that and grow it? And so one of your homework assignments last night was to consider what your nonverbal is, what your spouse or significant other's nonverbal thing is. And I want you to listen with open ears, and because what your spouse, who knows you probably better than anyone else, could be about to say to you is something that might surprise you. Wow, I really do that much? And I want you to ask, I want you to listen for a moment to what that is. Now, some of the things you're going to share are going to be positive. Some of them are going to be negative. The example I gave you last night was a negative thing for the thing that Jennifer did and her sigh. And left me guessing, or go, okay, what's that connected to? Because I know it's not good. And so take a minute and just share with each other what you kind of guessed it was. Let's see if we line up. Let's see if we discover something new. And the point of this exercise, it's going to be brief, is to put a pin in it for later. I want you to be more aware of your nonverbal so that you can work on those things or correct some things that are a little off, or you know, you're saying something you're not meaning to say. Wow, I'm not trying to say that there, so I need to work on that. So, okay, so let's take a second. Let's go ladies first this time. What do you think your husband's big nonverbal is, and what is yours? And then you guys can switch, talk about it.
Yeah,
It's fun to have no idea what you're talking about, but to even see your nonverbals and your smiles and you're soaking things up with each other is kind of fun. We need to be attentive to this area because you are in high jeopardy of potentially being hurtful with some of your nonverbals if you're not aware of them. I mean, it can become like a Tourette's kind of thing. You're spitting out hurtful words and you don't even realize you're doing it because of how that comes off. If it's coming off that way to the other person, even if you don't mean it to be, but it's coming off like a hurt and it's affecting them negatively, you need to want to go, okay, I want to work on that. I don't want to come off that way. I will learn to try to discipline that. You might even invite your spouse to say, help me become more aware of it when I'm doing it. I promise not to be defensive. I might be a little surprised. But help me tune on that. And then the other thing is the things that you do that are positive is to know what those are. Because, man, those can be really good. Wow, when you do this, woo, I love that. All right. I'll wield that more often then. That's good if that's a blessing to you. There's a lot of, especially in your marriage, a lot of little nonverbal things that we do to communicate all the time. And so we need to be attentive to that area of communication. Number two, communication is listening. This is such a big one. Most of the counseling I do when I sit with a couple is not telling them what they need to hear or know. It's not, let's go sit with Pastor Josh so he can tell us what we need to do differently. Most of the time, what my job is as counselor with a couple is to help you hear each other. That's where you're stuck. You're saying what needs to get said, but you're not hearing each other. And so the practice of listening is so big. James 1:19 says, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear and slow to speak, slow to anger." We need to bless each other by being quick and hungry to hear and not just to speak and tell and say, this is the what I want, this is where it's at. Selfless love longs to listen. Selfish love longs to tell and correct and speak and make it your way. There's different levels of listening that we got to be attentive to. The worst level of listening is ignoring. You're talking to me, but I'm looking over here or doing something else. I'm not hearing what you're saying. I'm not paying attention to you. I'm just ignoring you. It's really not listening at all. And we're guilty of that. We're guilty of not being attentive to our spouse. Why? Because we're together a lot. We believe that you'll still be there so I can not give you as much as I give the person I don't know as much. And that practice is really hard and hurtful in a marriage. We've got to make war with that. The next level of listening is pretending. Some of you are master Jedis at this one. You're so good at not really listening, but you just innately can say, uh-huh, right. Yeah, okay. And you didn't hear anything that person just said, but you're really good at dropping those little cues. You're pretending to listen, and that also very hurtful and hard, especially when you were supposed to pick up a key grocery for dinner and completely missed it, and now the whole meal's a bust, and you said you heard me. The next level is selective listening. Selective listening is hearing only certain parts of the conversation. In our selfishness, often when we're engaging, we can listen for the things that advance our end of the spectrum. Okay, see what you just said right there? That's good. I want to build on that. Let's talk about that for a second. But then the other part of what was said is not good for your end of the scenario or the case or what you're trying to talk about. So you ignore that part. So you're really only selectively hearing the parts of the conversation or what's being said or communicated that you want to hear. That's a next layer of listening. Then the next level is attentive listening. Attentive listening is paying attention with your body and your energy. So some of you are really good at being on the computer, working on something, watching a show, and having a full-blown conversation. Some of you are really capable of doing that. But attentive listening turns a corner. Attentive listening is when you put the phone down, when you get up from the bed, when you get into a position. I asked Ryan for permission to do this, so he knows he's going to be my guinea pig. And you're here. I'm not also doing something over here. My posture is attentive. My eyes are attentive. This is attentive listening. You think about how many conversations you have in a marriage where this is not what you do. Now, I'm not saying you got to get two kitchen chairs and sit awkwardly in the kitchen, right? It's not that. But sometimes the conversation or what's being talked about needs attentive listening. You might be having a pretty serious conversation in a drive. And sometimes you're going to need to have the discernment to go, you know what? This is really important. I can tell that this is a big deal. I want to be most attentive. So I'm going to pull over for a minute. Let me pull over the car, turn off the stereo. And now we can, or can we just, can we put a pin in that? I'd love to talk later tonight about that when I can just be most attentive to it. And the key is if you say that, you need to follow through. We need to be careful of wielding that as an excuse to get out of a more important conversation. But are you attentively listening? There's an honor and a respect that comes with that that is really important, especially in today's day and age with media that's all around. Before the mid-90s, you know, maybe the TV was the only thing that would climb into that space. Internet, computers, mobile media, you know, wasn't even around yet. So back in the days of corded phones, you know, what's that? So it is. It's something that we really have to be attentive to. Now, a lot of us would say, okay, well, that's the peak of the mountain. And what I'm about to share with you is game-changing, because there's another layer to listening that if you stop at attentive listening, you're really missing half the battle. Because this last layer of listening is one of the best tools, practical tools, I'm going to give you for all of your practice of daily marriage. And that is empathetic listening. Empathetic listening is listening with the intent to understand. It is seeking to understand before being understood. Getting inside the person's frame of reference. Getting behind the layers into where the heart is of why they feel the way they do about that thing. Okay, you don't want to go to Aunt Susie's for Christmas. I understand, I hear that, but empathetic listening goes to that level to say, I want to know why, I want to understand, so that I don't bulldoze over the top of that with just my own thinking about how important that is. I want to really understand your frame of reference, and that's going to give us a layer of communication that now I'm really experiencing now another layer of oneness with you. Empathy is identification and understanding of another situation, feelings, motives. A way you can test that in your conversation is to say back what you've heard. And if all you're going to say back is just the information translated, communicated, but not what you're saying back is not the heart behind it, then probably you haven't really done empathetic listening. As silly as the video is, it does get to the heart of some of the depth of the connection that the wife is looking for, to be understood. Now it's an outrageous illustration, but that really means something for that deeper layer of oneness in what your marriage is to really thrive. For love to really be communicated, it must be felt and received by the other person. And so is there a communication that's happening where, again, we're getting past just
what's being said. We're getting to the heart of what it is. We're really understanding each other. And when you value someone at that level to empathetically listen to them, it will do wonders for true oneness and not just the enduring of more what togetherness is. We're going to come back to this later when we get to conflict, so we'll pause on that. For love to be felt, for love to be communicated, it must be felt. You can say, I love you, but if the other person doesn't really feel that, is that really getting communicated? You've probably had that moment in your marriage where one of you has said, I know you say it all the time, but I don't feel it. And that needs to be a red flag. Now, that can be sometimes an extra pickiness that's over the top or a little out of bounds. But a lot of time what it's revealing is there's a way you're communicating your love that's missing the mark. And so this is where the love languages come in and is practically very helpful. In the love language, you have these different elements of how love and is communicated and received. We're all wired differently. I'm a words of affirmation person. And so the littlest compliment or observation about something pays huge dividends. That makes my heart sing way more than a really nice gift you would give me. Okay? And so if my wife only ever gives me gifts and never does this other thing, then the reality is, because of the way I'm wired, I could feel not very loved, even though there's a lot of action happening. So it is important that we learn each other's love languages and the way we're wired. Some of you are physical touch people. Again, that's not just a sexual thing. There's just a love language in that physical touch. Very close to words of affirmation is physical touch for me. My mom taught us that. Her family was just very warm and embracing, and that's how you really show genuine love is. You know, we were talking earlier about my oldest son, Noah, is a hugger. He's learned that from me and will hug. And that's a way you express that. And that's a big love language for him. When I come and put my arm around him or we can be close, that means something to him in a really powerful way. And so there's these different things, you know, words of affirmation, physical touch. Acts of service is a big one. Where someone does something for you. They went out of their way to serve you or to take care of something for you, and that really makes your heart sing. Gift giving, we mentioned. Gift giving is not about material things. It's about the thought that goes into... I was walking out of the grocery store and know your favorite color is purple, and I saw a purple ball in the bouncy ball machine, and $1.75 in, I got the purple ball. Here it is. I mean, that's really silly and stupid, but there's something that goes with that to a gift giver that's like, oh, that's so cool. And so it's about that thought or what went behind that action. What's the one I'm missing? Out of the five. Quality time. Quality time is attentiveness with each other. It's removing the distractions of the world and just being together. So for most quality time people, putting on a movie doesn't get the job done because the movie is what we're really engaging, not each other. So quality time is a walk down the street, is a glass of wine on the back porch, is doing an activity together where no one else is involved, but it's just us. We're just together, and we're spending that time. So it's important we understand what these are and hear what they are. And so the exercise of you writing down what is your love language, what's your spouse's love language, and again, seeing the difference is what you do to say I love you different than what people do that you receive love the most. And so Sometimes they really line up. You know, I'm not a gift giver. That's and that's low on my receiving love too. So a lot of mine line up. I'm a big hugger. You get to know me even after we met one time. There's a good chance I'm giving you a hug the second time I see you, because I know you. And it's just something that's in my world. In the motorcycle club, a bunch of tattooed, hairy bikers, even with the outlaw world that we run with, everyone just hugs each other as a toy. Once you know someone, that's how you engage. So it's a lot of it depends on kind of who you are. And some of you, like the physical touch thing, wow, that's low on the list for you because you didn't grow up in a family that did that, like mine. And that's a foreign thing. And so that's a learned practice. Now, as you share what you're about to do in a moment here, the goal is, for the sake of oneness, when you say, I want to do life with you for the rest of my life, what you're signing on for is who that person is. You don't get to say, I want you to be involved in every aspect of my life for the rest of my life, and then go, you know what, that part of who you are, like, I don't really care for that. I'm not really going to go there with you. So if a person's love language is this thing, it is now your job to learn to speak that love language. And to wrestle with it, and to be able to say, I'm not good at that one, and here's why. But I want to be good at it. I want to practice, and I want to be held accountable. I'm going to invite some friends around me. I want you to tell me if you feel like I'm slacking, because I want you to feel my love for you, because my love for you is rich and powerful and strong. I care for you deeply, and I want you to feel that. And so with that, we're going to have a little bit of a longer window because this one's longer. You're going to start by sharing how you communicate love, with each other. You should have ranked them 1, 2, 3. So sometimes you got close, but not quite there. As you say what it is, this can go a lot of ways. Let's say the bride says, okay, here's how I think you communicate love. You go, man, it's not what I put for myself. Tell me more why you think that is that way. Oh, I actually think you're right. I don't think I'm right. I think what you just said is really true. Or it could go the opposite, where you say something, they really feel like that's it, but then you go, okay, but I don't feel like it's that. Here's why I think it's this. And the goal is to get a clear understanding and get it lined up so you know truly where you're sitting with this. And like me, you might have a couple that are really close. Or you just might have that one thing and the rest of them just really fall off the page. So the goal here is to discover, again, we're going to do this for a moment together. I want to get you talking about this. But I'm hopeful that this is an exercise you take beyond the class. You want to know more. You say, hey, can we follow up on that? I do. I want to get better at that. You share with me how you feel like I've done that well, where I could do that better, whatever might come with that. So I'm going to try to keep you moving. So go ahead and jump in. Start by sharing how you communicate love, and then we'll go to how we receive love, and we'll see if those things line up, see how you guys did. So go ahead and jump in. Put a little background music on.
haven't switched, then do that to the other one. All right, I'm going to break in. Just for the sake of time, again, if you didn't get a finish, please pick that back up. In some of these interactions, you are likely hearing some stuff that's frustrating, or you're going, man, I thought I was doing better than you're saying I am. I want to continue to encourage you, if you're hearing some challenging things, to not be discouraged or defensive or excuse-making. I want you to be hungry to hear it and learn how to then yield it or pursue it better. The real fruit of this time together this weekend is that you would discover and be motivated to step into a new layer of the practice of where your marriage is at. So I just want to continue to encourage you to want to hear those things. You'll bless your spouse by picking up that conversation, especially if you were hearing some hard stuff. But let me walk through a couple of these real quick. By a raise of hands, how many of you did a pretty good job lining up on each other's as far as guessing? All right. How many of you were surprised that you didn't? You thought you would get a little better and you were a little... All right, no, you're not going to tell me that. Okay. It's okay, though. It really is a common thing where you know, there's some discovery about these things, and that's the point of the exercise. Picking up the book, The Five Love Languages, I would say is another book worthy of putting in your library and going through together as a study. Getting a couple other couples and digging into that can help you break into this a little further. Real quickly, I want to walk through each of these and give you a little bit of coaching, a little bit of insight on each of them. Words of affirmation first. How many, that was kind of your big one. You're with me. You're a big words of affirmation person, okay? Actions don't always speak louder than words if this is your love language. Unsolicited comments mean the world to you. Hearing the words, I love you, are important. I say that not only because I believe that as family, blood-bought family, that is an affection we are to have for each other in the church. I say it a lot. And some people are like, man, that feels like empty words. And not to me. I really mean that with my heart. And it means something. Hearing the reasons behind the love sends your spirit skyward. Spoken or written words of encouragement or observation or affection mean the world to you. Insults can leave you shattered and are sometimes not easily forgotten. Quality time. In the vernacular of quality time, nothing says I love you like undivided attention. Being there for this type of person is critical. Really being there. TV off, fork and knife down, chores and tasks on standby makes your significant other feel truly special and loved. Gift giving, not mistaking gift giving for materialism. The receiver of the gift thrives on love, thoughtfulness, the effort behind the gift. If you speak this love language, the perfect gift or gesture shows that you are a known entity, that you're cared for, that you're prized in that sacrifice of the bringing of that gift. Acts of service. Vacuuming the floors, can that really be a major act of love? Absolutely. Anything you do to ease the burden of responsibilities.
with acts of service will speak volumes to your spouse if that's their love language. The words he or she most wants to hear is, let me do that for you. To actually see through things that you said that you would do and make them happen means a lot. Physical touch is not just about the bedroom. A person whose primary love language is physical touch is not surprisingly just a touchy person. Hugs, pats on the back, holding hands, thoughtful touches on the arm, shoulder, face can always be a great measure to show concern, care, love. Physical presence is big for a physical touch person. And so those are just good things to be aware of in the love language categories. The negatives for a words of affirmation person: silence can be painful. Insults can leave you hurting. Quality time, distractions. If you're a quality time person, postponed dates can be really hard or offensive. Failure to listen can be especially hurtful for a quality time person. Receiving gifts, a missed birthday or anniversary, or hasty gifts, thoughtless gifts can be disastrous. The absence of that practice. Acts of service, the words he or she wants to hear, let me do that for you. So laziness, broken commitments, making more work for the other person is all working against that. Physical touch, physical distance, or even neglect. Physical neglect can really work the opposite for a physical touch person. So those are just things to be observant in that area. Okay, let's turn a corner now into how do we have healthy conflict. I said at the opening of the class, you're going to have conflict. Why? Because you both, unless you were married at 11, grew up on your own two feet, in your own household and world and environment, and with a different perspective and view on life and the way things are done in the house and in life. And you bring that together into a marriage, and now you're looking for the melding of those two into a new family, new practices, but you're just constantly going to have to work through the conflict that comes in how a situation went down or observed or happened. Difference of priorities or feelings or motivations. And so how do we work through that? So let me say again, conflict is not a bad thing. It is a real part of doing life. It's real. You're different. The key is, how do we have healthy conflict? So a couple of just really poignant tips in this. Number one, be careful not to blame is tip number one. Use I statements when in conflict with each other. You statements, pointing, leaning in can feel very attacking in conflict. Describe your feelings without the other person feeling like it's an attack on and their fault. There's a way you can share disappointment or concern or this hurt me in a way that's not leaning in. If we're in conflict, if Ryan and I are in conflict and I'm coming at him with, you did this, that's going to make him feel like he's going to fall over, or what's going to commonly happen is to fight that off, he's going to push back to not fall over. Do you see that? So if in that conflict I can use I statements and I can share observations without coming at him, I've set the table now for interaction to happen in conflict that can be more life-giving. And so we want to be very careful to not attack with even our words or our statements. Be careful not to blame. Number two, beware of kitchen sinking. All right, kitchen sinking is when you are in a conflict or a fight and you are throwing everything at them and the kitchen sink. I mean, anything you can grab, anything you can remember. Proverbs 28:11, a fool gives full vent to anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. This is where forgiveness comes back in. You have to get good at forgiving each other in your marriage. It is a regular practice. Because if you don't, then you are just saving up an armory of hurt that when it blows up and it's on, it's just, oh man, I got so much to throw at you. You are going down. I'm going to rock your world right now. I mean, I'm so right and you're so wrong. Because what you have in your mind and your heart is all this undealt with hurt that you've been storing up. So it is critical that you practice forgiving and truly giving up that right to get even, giving up that hurt, so that it's not in your wheelhouse to grab and pull the pin on and throw back. A rule to put into play, if it wasn't important enough to talk about back then, in the middle of this fight or conflict, it's off limits. So in order to win the fight about this topic, you don't get to go back here and pull out things of old to stack the deck on your side. Now, you might, some of that stuff may come to mind that you didn't deal with rightly in the middle of an argument, but you need to put a pin in it and come back to it later and not stack this up. Because one of the worst ways to have healthy conflict is to convolute the conflict with a whole bunch of other things that you got to work out. Right? I mean, you've done this, you know what I'm talking about, and then it just all goes bad, and we don't work any of it out because we're navigating all these other things. So the key is stay focused on the issue at hand. That's the next point. Keep focused on the issue at hand. Before we move forward, coming back, if you're aware of things that are behind you that you didn't deal with well, it needs to be an encouragement that you need to get better at dealing with that stuff. For the sake of the marriage, for the sake of the health of the conflict, that when something happens, you forgive it and let it go. Or if it's not going away and it needs to be talked out, you bring it up close to when it happens and you get it out. And in that, you need to be careful not to be talking about every little thing. You should be forgiving and letting a lot of stuff go. Why? Because you're doing everyday life together. If you're going to nitpick each other on every little thing, it's just going to be an endless train of just constant conflict. So how are you recognizing this person's growing? I have to have grace for them. There's these things. I see them working on it. But in maybe those areas where that's not happening or it needs to get talked out, then talk it out so it can be understood. Hey, this hurt me. I want to say why. Hey, I forgive you. I want to get that out. I want to get that behind us so it's not in my wheelhouse later when something bigger goes down. If your spouse is doing that in a conflict, they're getting into other topics lovingly. Don't bring me in the middle of your fight. Remember, Pastor said I don't need to be in the middle of that. Just lovingly say, can we stay here? Let's finish talking about this. And I promise you, we can come back to that. But let's finish this. And so those are just some helpful tips as far as interaction and how to navigate an argument. Keep focused on the issue at hand. Sleep helps. I had to learn this the hard way. Jennifer and I are kind of opposite in our marriage. She's more like the guy and I'm more like the gal when it comes to talking things out. I, early on, was guilty of keeping us up till 2:30 in the morning because we were going to keep talking about it until we figured it out. And she was done at 10:15. Just done. I'm dealing with a baked zombie after that. And it's no wonder why I'm not going anywhere. Frustrated. She's totally frustrated because she's like, dude, I'm half asleep. So I had to learn that. Okay, it's okay to agree that we are not done talking about it, but we need to get some sleep or to agree to step away and let's come back to it. You know, a lot of times, what fuels that sometimes is the whole don't go to bed angry thing. So we feel like, oh, we got to get it all worked out. But then the whole rest of your week's all messed up because you stayed up till 2:30. And so there is a way to be highly disagreeing and really upset at each other, but to still dig down to something that's true, which is to say, I love you. I want this to get resolved.
can we pick this back up tomorrow at this time? And then if you're the one who initiates that, be good to get back to it. So that person can have that trust in you to say, okay, let's go to sleep. Or let's take a break and come back to it. Why that's helpful sometimes is when you're really storming at each other, what you need is a timeout to get sane again. And the sleep, how often have you done this? You wake up the next morning and you're kind of going, like, really, was I that upset about it? Like, that seems so dumb. You know, like, I'm sorry. Like, I can't believe I got that worked up. And I do. And God will just bless you with even some resolve with the break or even stepping away to say, hey, let's take 10 minutes. I'm going to go for a walk. I need to just go pray. One of the great blessings to an argument is to go get with the Lord. Because likely you're driving the argument with your pride. And so to go get before your holy God and say, God, help me with this, he's going to humble you. And that whole action of going, God, give me what I need and let me love my spouse well, is going to help slay your flesh that is driving and pressing and give you a better temperament for coming back to it. Work to resolve conflict. So this comes to the other part of your homework at the bottom of the page. What do you typically go to when conflict arrives? And a lot of this in you is birthed from your childhood. It's what you were taught by your families. It's the way you survived in your household. So let me walk through these real quick, and then you can share. Number one is withdrawal. A withdrawer is conflict's coming. You're like, oh, uh-uh. You know, and you just shut down. You're like, no, I'm not going there. Fine. What, you know, like, you just withdraw. You hide. You just avoid it at all, at every effort, okay? And so it never gets talked out or worked out. It just gets buried under the rug, and eventually you got this stinky pile of mess because you've just withdrawn from all the needed conflict that needs to get worked out. Number two, pick fights to win just for fun. Some of you grew up in households where literally the way you interacted with each other is you just picked fights with each other. It was almost like this, like, tweaked love language. You know, you just said something to, like, get the room riled up, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is when our family's the best, you know? And then you bring that into your marriage, and you're just, like, picking at your spouse, like, to feel alive, you know? And so some of you are like, wow, I just don't get that. But some of you are like, too, I totally get that. Like, that one's me, man. And you're constantly looking to pick fights just for fun. A lot of you, this is a common one, are yielders. So your way of dealing with conflict is you just say, oh, I really don't like conflict. Okay, honey, whatever you want. Yeah, that's fine. We'll do what you want. And deep down inside, you're just broken. You feel completely walked over. And it looks like you're rightly being submissive or caring. But deep down inside, you just feel dead. You're not alive. There's not a healthy resolve to the conflict. You're just giving in order to avoid it. And that needs to be worked on. But a lot of times yielding is what you do. Look to compromise is one where, you're a good negotiator. Okay, you want to go to Aunt Susie's for Christmas, and I want to be at Mother's for Thanksgiving. And so you're kind of like, well, what do we do this, and then we'll do that. It's a 50-50 thing. You're constantly looking for that 50-50 agreement. A little bit of what you want, a little bit of what I want. And then try to win is also a common one. Conflict happens. You're like, of course I'm right and you're wrong, so I just got to tell you why. I'll just keep talking about it until you realize I'm right. Right? So it's like, yeah, of course I'm going to win because I'm right. And you're wrong. And it's unfortunate that you're always wrong and I'm right, but that's the way it's going to be. Right? So take a quick second. Share with each other what you put down for the common way that you deal with conflict. Let's see how these match up. What you put for yourself, what you put for the other person. Again, listen, want to hear, talk it out. Again, it's not about being right now. It's about hearing and seeing where this sits. Okay, so take a quick second and do that. All right. Again, good topic for conversation. Follow up later. A little more about that. Want to understand how you're sharing that with each other. Let me help here. None of those commonly practiced options on the page that you just talked about, as far as which one you or more commonly go to, none of those are a good way, a healthy way to deal with conflict. A lot of times we think that the compromise one is the right one on the page because you're looking to listen and compromise. Here's the problem with compromise. If your practice in your marriage to resolve conflict is always compromise, I want you to think about that for a minute. Your marriage is a journey of compromise. My marriage is a bunch of compromise. There is a huge negative connotation to that. In compromise, you might always both be getting something you want, but there's a flip side to that coin, which is you're also both constantly not getting part of what you want and can feel very compromised in a negative way in that. And so what I want you to really hear, this is important this morning, the goal in healthy conflict resolution is to resolve the conflict. Resolve, mutual understanding and agreement. For oneness to thrive, you want to get good at finding resolve to your conflict. Sometimes agreeing to disagree can be healthy, but you don't always have to work every little thing out. You can have some different perspectives or opinions, and that's okay. But in other things where you've got to make a mutual decision, you've got to figure out, okay, then what are we going to do with the bonus? Or how are we going to prioritize this thing with the kids? You've got to work to get to a place in that conflict to get to resolve. The resolve finish is the life-giving finish to the conflict. How do you do that? And this is where empathetic listening comes back into play, okay? If what we're disagreeing about is the podium, and she is coming from a position that's right here. Hey, honey, it's this and it's not this, and I don't know why you can't see that. And he is coming from a position that's right here, and he's going, I don't know what you're talking about. It's this and it's like this. And what you're saying just makes no sense. No, you're wrong. How do you resolve that so you can continue to really thrive in your oneness? Empathetic listening will help you. So if I'm in the man's position, this is the view of the podium. Empathetic listening says, honey, I want to understand why you feel the way you do about the podium. I want to hear the heart behind that. I want to get into your perspective. So please share with me more, because I'm not getting it. And I want to listen well. I want to listen attentively. I want to listen empathetically. So you ask questions and she shares. And here's what will happen. If you listen empathetically well, you will do this. You will slowly get to come up alongside her and say, ah, now I see the way you see it. You still may not agree, but that posture, watch this, in your conflict, you're not dukes up going, you're wrong and I'm right, and we're fighting. Empathetic listening puts that down and allows me to soften my hard stance, because I really am interested in getting my arm around you and seeing it the way you see it. And that letting down of those defenses and that true deep heart desire to empathetically listen helps the person feel heard and loved, and many times will help. So here's what you do. You got to practice. One person's got to practice listening, and then what you got to do is flip roles. And then she's got to say, I want to understand yours. So she's got to empathetically listen and end up here looking at it from his perspective. And now she's able to go, oh, okay, now I see why
that hurts you so much, or why you were so offended by that, or why it's so important to you because of this thing that happened to you 20 years ago, and now I understand this thing that's present. I just didn't get it. Now I get it. In that posture of empathetic listening, you are in a much better place now to have resolve in your decision making. And one of the biggest reasons why is because you have loved each other enough to put down the I must be right position and must win and have it my way. You've put down the selfishness that says I won't waste time learning your side of it. Selfless love says, no, I really care about you. I wanted to be married to you because your opinion, your perspective, I want to have in my life in all of these little things. And so I want to practice empathetic listening. Sometimes what that will equal is we decided and all of that to take a position that's over here. This is where we ended up on that situation. We agreed to something totally different. Or often what it might look like is, in all a good and healthy and right way, the resolve is you stood here and go, hey, this is our position. This is our decision together. Our resolved decision is from this perspective, or maybe from over there. The point is at the end of the conflict, you both genuinely are saying, I feel heard, I feel understood. I am joyfully willing to go with you in forward in this way. And now we have a mutual understanding and resolve to the decision making. It takes work. A lot of the reason why people don't do this exercise, selfishness, and it takes time. And you might be listening well and say back, okay, here's what I understand, and she'll be like, no, you're completely missing the mark. Okay, let's try again. I genuinely want to understand it. Sometimes, depending on the depth of the conflict, this is where counseling is needed. There is something powerful that God does in community that allows us to help each other. When two knees, a left and right knee, are not agreeing, sometimes they need the elbow to help them have that third perspective or to help them hear each other. Again, that's what I'm mainly doing in counseling. We're slowing down to help her understand his position. Do you get where he's coming? Okay, I finally get that. They just need to, a lot of times what we need is to just be loved and kind of be helped through it. So if you have major conflict that's not getting resolved, don't just set it aside and keep doing 10 more years of marriage. Be willing to seek out counseling. One of the biggest reasons why we make couples go through premarital counseling before we'll marry them is not only for all the foundation laying of these kinds of helpful tools, but it's to give them the memory that, hey, it was okay to be vulnerable with someone else in the room. Because I guarantee you, you'll need it later. Jennifer and I have needed it. We've had to sit with other brothers and sisters and pastors to help us work through a couple of things. That was a beautiful thing. It was a tool in our toolbox in the church and in life to lean on those who are gifted to help you navigate it. We have couples now in our church where they'll do that with other couples in their small groups. And just people we've been raising up and maturing and disciple making are able to help us. It's not only the pastor that does that anymore. Praise God that we get to share that burden. We get to really be the church to each other in that way. So resolve is key in your conflict and how you are handling conflict. And empathetic listening is an important instrument of that. And sometimes you're arguing in the car, it just takes one of you to say, okay, obviously we're not seeing eye to eye. I want to practice empathetic listening. You can even just say this. I'm going to pull up the white flag. I'll start. I want to really understand why you feel about it the way you do. And that's the cue to share and work through it. And then for the other person to say, okay, now it's my turn. I want to understand the way you see it. And that putting the gloves down and doing that will help you get to a place of resolve. Okay. Some practical communication tips to close up this session. Number one, share the deep things with each other. Weak conversation is about other people. I can walk up to any bum on the street corner who I don't know who he is or what he's about, and we can talk about how my Broncos are going to destroy the evil empire tomorrow. I hope.
Or talk about our feelings on the president or on, you know, the weather. Because weak conversation, there's no risk to talk about other people. You're not personally invested in it. Average conversation is about things. Maybe you have a little more ownership of, you know, a happening in your day or an item that you're interacting with together. It's not as weak as something that you're just totally not connected to. But deep conversation is about feelings and ideas and dreams. It's the part of you that's risking to share the deeper side of where you really live. And if that conversation is not handled well, you're risking more. The unfortunate thing is a lot of couples don't practice deep conversation. You only live in the report of your day or talking about the game or the kids or whatever else. You need to be making time to talk about the deeper things, to keep that part of your intimacy and oneness thriving, to listen and share and dig in. Number two, choose your words wisely. Psalm 58:4, they spit poison like deadly snakes. They are like cobras that refuse to listen. David's talking about people who misuse their tongue and literally how poisonous it can be. You have to be very careful about how you wield your tongue and your body language in your marriage because it can be a toxic, hurtful thing. The tongue is the only tool that grows sharper with constant use, says Washington Irving in the late 1700s. The words we say can and do change lives. They can launch people into victory or ruin them for failure. I don't know who quoted that. I might have come up with that back in the day. I don't know. Sounds good. I have that in quotes and there's no one connected to it. Colossians 3, let the words of Christ in all their richness live in your hearts and make you wise. Use his words to teach and counsel each other. Sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs to God with thankful hearts. Hebrews 10:24, let us consider how we might spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Are you building up or are you tearing down? I'm going to show you the opening of the next session of video. It's from a secular couple out on the internet, and it's going to give an illustration of how we disagree on how to do everyday activities in a marriage. So its illustration is pretty funny. But there is a moment in it where he lazily spits out a word you should never use to describe your wife. I'm going to try to mute it at that part so we don't have to go through it. And she just does this, what do you say? And, you know, and then that might, you might laugh that off for a minute, but man, I mean, you have to be very careful to bring any kind of playground joking into your marriage because there is a bond and a connection and an intimacy that you share, a vulnerability, a transparency that we've got to be careful to not let our sin play light in that vulnerable context where you might do some really hard damage and just being flippant or lazy with your words. I really in counseling encourage couples to not go to that extreme place where some of you are good at going to. When you fight hard and mean and you say terrible things to each other. Try to counsel couples, that should be off limits. Off limits. It's just doing this the other day with a couple. And the way I illustrate it like this, I said, what if you're coming to me today and you said, we're hitting each other. I mean, we're just getting each other bloody. I go, do you see how I say that back to you? How you say it, it almost hurts to kind of imagine it. How off limits that is in a marriage. I want you to see that aggressive, hateful, yelling at each other, hard words at each other, needs to be put in that same box. If you're starting to escalate to that place, time out yourself and go to the backyard and fall on your knees before Holy God and say, God, get my heart right, because what I'm about to do to my spouse is just not okay.
and humble yourself and calm down so that you don't go there, okay? Two more. Beware of the TV trap. And this really internet trap goes with this. In today's day and age, if we could put a video camera in your household, a lot of you are guilty of the main way you spend time together is in front of the TV or some form of internet, phone or computer is in front of you. You come home, you plug in, you got the jam jams on, you're hanging out, but you're not engaged. You're just letting the world come at you. You're interacting with everyone else but your spouse. In my premarital counseling, Jennifer and I, our mentors gave us a great word of counsel, and we watched them do this in their household. They didn't have a TV out regularly. Now, this is in the late 90s, so it's now flat screen TVs are so cheap, you got them all over your house. But back then, you had one TV. They put their TV away and then brought it out for special movie night, or X-Files was their favorite show. Remember, they'd have X-Files night. I'm dating myself here. But they put it away. And so they challenged us. They said, Josh and Jen, in your first year of marriage, no TV. We want to challenge you to not having any TV in your first year of marriage. And the reason why was because that's such a formative season in the life of your marriage that we don't want you to learn the practice of just plugging in and just letting the world come at you and not learning how to really enjoy life together. Well, we took it up this whole another stage. We moved from Orange County to the woods of Shaver Lake, out literally pine trees all around. I could see one other roof from our property. So like living in the forest, and didn't get TV, and you know, friends are not all around like they were in the city, and we had to learn to spend time together out on the porch playing games, activities. It's great. Super helpful for our marriage. Great thing. And actually taught us later in life how we've had different seasons where we've unplugged, we've canceled the cable when budget's tight, and we go, hey, that can go. And it's been good for our family, it's been good for our marriage to have learned how to put limitations on that. And we've had seasons where we struggle. We have to stop and go, wow, we're just doing way too much of that again. Let's just shut it down. So I encourage you, be very aware of that trap of how much you're constantly engaging in those things and being limited to it for the sake of the development of the relationship. And then finally, pray together. Your communication with God is key. It helps you remember that He needs to stay in the middle of who you are. Don't leave Him out of your marriage. Let the Lord be a part of your communication. Let that triple braided cord be lived out in the fact that you pray as a family and as a couple, pray for each other. And don't just say you're going to do it, but you actually do it. Wives, you know, pray for your husbands before they leave. Guys, you're out in the evening, you're working late night, make it a habit to call home, pray over your wife, pray over your kids before they go to bed. You know, work that in. Let talking with God be a regular part of driving down the road and doing life together, more than just bedtime and mealtime. And that will be a huge part of helping with communication, keeping the Lord in the middle of your relationship. All right, so take a quick break, use the restroom, get refilled. We'll come back for session two on stewardship. We'll kick that off with another video, and you'll know to jump back in. So take a minute. Thanks.